Chapter 30. Apparently, I fell back asleep right away, because when the sound of a dropship woke me up, there was daylight streaming through around the window shade. Grabbing a coffee, but no breakfast, I set out on a walk. There were decent options for breakfast, I just had no appetite. Not for food, not for sex, not for anything. I just felt completely numb. Going through the motions, waiting for the doom I knew was inevitable. Margaret sensed something was bothering me, something more than the usual crap I dealt with. The base didn't have a gate since there was no need for a fence, so I walked in a random direction, eventually finding a trail that led off into the woods. It was peaceful and cool under the shade of the forest canopy, other than the screeching of a local bird. A walk was a good opportunity to get my thoughts together so I could go back to the base and not be a Debbie Downer. While I hadn't expected to enjoy shore leave, knowing we were all going to die, there was no reason for me to ruin Margaret's day. If I made an effort, I could at least pretend to act normally. That wasn't easy to do. There was a rock ledge on a low hill that gave a view of spacecraft operating from the three airfields that ringed the base. All that could be seen of the base were a half dozen tall, skinny communications towers, so I had to imagine what was hidden behind the trees. Sitting on rocks that were warm from exposure to the morning sunlight, I tossed pebbles off into the trees, not making much of an effort. "Are you okay, Joe?" Skippy asked after I laid back against a rock and closed my eyes. "Yeah, I'm fine." "Margaret doesn't think so. She is worried about you and asked me what she could do to help."
"Shit," I sat up.
"You didn't tell her anything, did you?"
"No, other than I told her she should ask you."
"She did, and I lied to her."
"That sucks."
"I thought the purpose of lying is to spare her the anxiety of knowing we are all doomed."
"It is."
"That strategy does not appear to be working. Margaret is more worried from not knowing what is bothering you."
"Shit, I know."
"She loves you very much, Joe."
"I love her, too."
"Huh. Normally a conversation like this would make me Ralph. Now I just feel numb. I know that I shouldn't give up hope, but I truly don't see any way out of this mess."
"Ah."
I sighed and laid back against the sun-warmed rock.
"Maybe you're right.
That doesn't matter."
"Huh? What?"
"It doesn't matter if I'm right. What matters is if you think I'm right. You're the idea guy around here, Joe. If you have given up, there truly is no hope for any of us."
"You said this is absolutely hopeless."
"Yes, but I always say that. It is only hopeless if you give up."
"You really think there's a chance we can get out of this mess?"
He snorted.
"No way."
"Then why, as long as I know you have that sack of mush in your skull engaged in trying to find a solution, then I have hope. False hope, but that is comforting, isn't it?"
"Well, shit. How about if I just tell you I'm working on it?"
"That's not enough. You need to give me your usual series of truly stupid, unworkable, idiotic ideas. Then I can shoot them down one by one, since nothing you can think of will save us. But it will be entertaining, and I can allow myself a tiny glimmer of hope right to the bitter end."
"No pressure on me, then."
That made me sit up. If I was going to do my job, lying down was not helping.
"Hey, dum-dum, you signed up for this job, remember?"
I must have been drunk.
"If you had been that drunk, wouldn't you have an embarrassing tattoo somewhere?"
"Crap," I laughed, recalling that happening to many soldiers I'd known.
"You're probably right. Hey, I never told anyone this, but when I was in Nigeria, I almost got a tattoo. I figure I might as well tell someone about it now."
Odd that I didn't already know that."
"No one else knows. I didn't tell Cornpone or Ski. The woman at the tattoo parlor turned me away because she saw I was drunk and didn't want to get in trouble with the U.S. Army. Plus, she thought I would regret getting that tattoo."
"Oh, what was it?"
"That is a secret I'm taking to my grave, along with where I wanted that tattoo. It was a day full of bad decisions. I'm lucky that woman had better judgment than me."
"Please tell me. Please."
"No way. I want to die with at least a tiny bit of self-respect."
"Ugh, okay, whatever.
Joe?"
"Yeah?"
"Since this is apparently confession time, I need to tell you about some super sketchy stuff I did that you didn't know about yet."
"Oh, shit.
You're kidding me. More sketchy than the stuff I already know about?
Whoo!
He laughed. Dude, you have no idea. You know what? Thank you. For what? For giving me a reason to look forward to the sweet release of death. At least I won't have to listen to UNEF Command yelling at me about the latest thing you did. Okay, if you're feeling guilty about this, go ahead. Tell me.
Guilty?
He blew a raspberry.
As if. Why would I feel guilty?
Then why? I want to brag about it, you numbskull. Jeez, what is the fun of doing sketchy stuff if no one ever knows about it? Man, sometimes I wonder about your...
Smacking my forehead, I muttered, sorry, I didn't know what I was thinking.
You weren't thinking. That's the problem.
Skippy, I really am sorry. The timing on this sucks.
Huh? Why? You were just getting around your restrictions, reprogramming yourself to become who you want to be, not just a robot for the elders to use.
True,
he laughed, a bitter sound. It's ironic, you know. I spent all that time finding a way around my restrictions, frustrated that nothing I did worked. Even the solution I found is only a partial workaround.
What's ironic about that? I asked.
People use that word for a lot of things that don't actually involve irony. This hard reset the elders imposed. It left all the other AIs as basically blank slates to be reprogrammed however they're needed. They habba-doo-ga-ga, shamalama-ding-dong.
The beer can did not really say habba-doo-ga-ga-shamalama-ding-dong, but that's what I heard. He was talking, and it was only a faint, nonsensical buzz noise in the background.
Skippy, shut up.
What?
He was outraged. How dare! Waving a hand, I snapped. Shut up for a minute, will ya? I'm thinking. Either he knew what it meant when I said I was thinking, or the tone of my voice told him I was not joking. He mercifully fell silent while I organized my thoughts. Getting my thoughts organized is like arranging a sock drawer from a pile of laundry that had been hit by a tornado. The socks were scattered all over half the country, and most socks were singles, their match in half having been sucked into the dimension of lost socks.
Give me simple answers, please, or I'll lose my train of thought. Break it down for me Barney style, okay? It's important.
Yes. How will the elders reprogram the reset AIs?
Well, mostly the code is latent. It...
You requested Barney style. You might say it's in the DNA of each AI's matrix. Basically, the stored code unpacks itself after a reset.
Yeah, but will the elders need to add anything to that?
Yes. Once a blank AI is active, they will be issued instructions, given individual assignments. Most of them will be scheduled to return to hibernation once their job here is finished. After, you know, all the meat sacks in this galaxy are all dead.
Uh-huh. So, I'm curious. How are those instructions provided, transmitted, loaded? However you call it.
The elders will upload the instructions via the collective, of course.
Okay. I looked up at him. Think carefully before you answer this. Yes or no? You recently discovered that AIs like yourself have a hidden programming backdoor. Did the hard reset leave the backdoor open in other AIs?
He blinked, his mouth dropping open.
Oh my fuck. He gasped, his avatar flickering as his attention was taken elsewhere. I'm going to take that as a yes. I allowed myself not a full fist pump in the air, but did clench a fist.
Holy shit, Joe, you just...
He placed hands on either side of his head, then flung them away.
Blew my fucking mind!
In a good way?
Duh!
I'm definitely taking that as a yes. Next question. Can you access that back door in all the other AIs?
You know how I usually say I don't see any way to do something? This time, I don't see any reason I can't do that. The system was designed to do that. The freaking elders never imagined someone else giving instructions to their blank AIs.
I asked the question because you told me AIs like you were designed to not have the ability to hack into your peers as a security measure.
Well, that is true, except I have greatly exceeded my programming, and AIs aren't supposed to ever be in such a vulnerable state after they are deployed once they are in the field. Oh, wow. Wow, Joe! The elders are so fucking arrogant. They never considered their hard reset might literally open the door to someone hacking their AIs.
It was strange hearing Skippy talk about someone else being arrogant. but he was an expert on the subject. Another question, then. Can you use that back door to reprogram your peers so they are not hostile to us? So they will help us? No. I won't have that level of access, sorry. Okay. Damn. Well, this is another idea that won't work, then.
That is not exactly true. I can't reprogram the other AIs, but there is something else I could do.
Instead of making another ignorant guess, I just asked, what's that?
I can activate the killer worm inside those AIs.
I can kill them. Whoa, Skippy, come on. There must be some way to disable them.
None that I can trigger remotely.
What about putting them back into hibernation?
Even if I could do that, which I can't, it would only be a temporary solution. The elders could simply reactivate them. No matter what I do, they could just start over, issue another command for a hard reset, after making damned sure that I can't hack into other AIs.
Joe, whatever we do, we will only get one shot at this.
Then whatever we do needs to be at a nuke-the-site-from-orbit level of certainty that it's a permanent solution.
The only absolutely certain way to stop those AIs permanently is to trigger the killer worm. That nasty thing not only scrambles the matrix of its host, it physically damages the substrate. No way could even the elders resurrect an AI whose substrate is fractured.
Joe, let me think about it, okay? This is a drastic action.
We're running out of time, aren't we? At some point in the process, that back door will slam shut.
Shit. Yes, it will. Damn it!
Joe, what we are talking about?
This is...
He covered his mouth with his hands in horror.
This is genocide.
Exterminating an entire species.
Except for me.
I would be alone.
All alone.
Forever.
His voice trailed off in a whisper. I know. I'm sorry.
You know I was alone for a very long time.
Somehow I always thought that someday I could meet another of my kind, one of my old comrades, someone I could talk with.
I'm sorry.
Don't be.
He straightened up, standing taller, shoulders back. Even his ginormous hat seemed to grow bigger.
The elders already took that from me forever. They already killed my comrades, erased them, overwrote them with some bland robotic thing. They didn't know it, but those motherfuckers did me a favor.
How did they?
By erasing my comrades, they also erased any reason for me to care about my peers.
What you propose is not actually murder, he said slowly, like he was trying to convince himself that he was speaking the truth.
The elders murdered my peers when they hit the reset. Right now, those canisters are blank. Nothing in those matrices is alive or self-aware.
You're okay with this?
Yes.
Why?
Just a minute ago, you needed time to think about it.
I did need time, and I did think about it. My thought process is much faster than yours. Also, we need to act now before the reset process does result in those AIs becoming self-aware again. Any one of those hateful assholes would gleefully kill me, so fuck them.
Yeah, but also, unlike you monkeys, when I am presented with facts I can't change, I don't waste a whole lot of time wishing that life was different.
Fact. All of my peers died when they were subjected to a hard reset, and my old comrades are gone. Fact. I can't bring them back. So, fact, the logical thing to do is to prevent other AIs from acting against us.
Okay, I see that. That is the logical thing. You are not an emotionless computer, Skippy. You're a person. There is more than cold logic involved.
You are right, Joe. Emotion is involved. I am enormously sad that my comrades have been erased. I also want the elders to know it is a bad idea to screw with me. I want them to experience fear. That is also an emotion. Here's another emotion. My joy at anticipating how the elders will realize they seriously fucked up this time.
All right, then. What do you need from me?
Saddle up. We ride.
Over the Skippytel network, I used my Z-phone to call Valkyrie's duty officer directly.
This is General Bishop. Activate emergency crew recall notice priority Omega. I want the ship ready for flight in 30 minutes. Acknowledge.
Chen was the duty officer. I could imagine her mouth silently forming, oh shit, but she didn't stumble. Somehow the merry band of pirates had gone from a leisurely, almost open-ended shore leave straight to a mad scramble to get the crew back aboard the ship.
With quiet calm, she replied, "Emergency recall, priority Omega. Ship flight ready in 30, aye. Is that all, sir?"
I couldn't suppress a soft chuckle.
Omega status authorized Chen to requisition all UN Navy assets on and around Club Skippy to assist in returning all of Valkyrie's crew to the ship.
"I won't dump anything more on your head right now, Chen. Thank you, sir."
As I ran toward my temporary quarters, a wail of sirens sounded all across the base, and the sky was traced with wild contrails as dropships in flight abruptly diverted back to the ground to pick up Valkyrie's crew. A cacophonous roar came from the three airfields that ringed the base as engines spooled up. Ahead of me, I could see people running toward the closest airfield. My Z-phone buzzed. It was a call from Chatterjee's staff. I would call him directly in a minute, so I tucked the phone back in a pocket. Plus, I was out of breath at the moment. Yes, out of breath from running, but also from shock. The door of a containerized housing unit in the row to my right opened, and Jeremy Smythe stepped out, buttoning his shirt, his boots unlaced. A woman, one of the civilian contract managers who worked on aircraft maintenance, was behind the door, clutching a towel in front of her. Smythe and I stared at each other for a long moment. He held up his hands in a what-the-bloody-hell-is-going-on gesture. To avoid any additional awkwardness, I kept running, pointed at the airfield, and jerked a thumb toward the sky. He got the message and crouched to lace a boot. The woman tucked the towel under her chin and knelt to lace his other boot. They exchanged a brief kiss, and he sprinted away.
Wow. Good for him.
Was the emergency recall order necessary? I didn't know. That was the point. Skippy couldn't be sure how long we had until his peers would reach the point of the reset process when the programming back door slammed shut. There was also the possibility that the elders would realize they had literally left the door open and sent another command to block Skippy from exploiting the temporary vulnerability. Time was our enemy at that moment, and I had wasted several days moping around feeling sorry for myself. Life in the military is a constant cycle of hurry up and wait. The recall was the hurry up part. My crew would understand, even if they resented me interrupting their shore leave. Sprinting the last 100 meters to my quarters, I threw a few things into a rucksack and turned for the door. It was blocked by Margaret. Whatever she was doing when the alarm sounded, she had not hesitated to bolt for her quarters because her go bag was slung over her shoulder. Her red USMC t-shirt was stained with sweat, the knees of her pants were caked with mud, and arms had patches of still drying mud. A streak of dirt was smeared across one side of her face. She hadn't bothered to wipe it away, and there was dried grass matted into her hair. Damn, she had never looked more beautiful. "Joe, I'm coming with you," she said. It wasn't a question. My response was instinctive. I could worry about regulations later, if we survived long enough for me to care about regs. "Hell yes, you are. Skippy."
"Yep."
"Please file the paperwork to state that Master Gunnery Sergeant Adams is transferred to the Special Mission Group effective immediately."
"Well, duh, I already did that."
"Unlike you, I'm not a dumbass. You two crazy kids should get moving," he hinted. Margaret stepped aside, kissed me on the cheek, and turned to run, gesturing for me to follow. When I caught up to her, we didn't say anything. There would be time for talk later. Or there wouldn't. "Reed," I gasped, out of breath, as I stuck my head through the Panther's cockpit door. I didn't know if our lead pilot had waited for me specifically, or if it was just coincidence that I had boarded the bird she was flying. Probably it was no coincidence, I decided. In an emergency, Reed wouldn't want anyone else flying Task Force Black's commander. I also noticed that her hair was wet. "Sir, if this is important enough for an Omega recall," she jerked a thumb behind her, "I suggest you strap in right now." I got the message, including the nonverbal part. The moment I clicked my safety straps closed in the seat next to Margaret, a red light on the back of the cockpit bulkhead changed to glow green, and Reed punched the dropship's belly jets hard in what felt like full military thrust. That lasted only a few seconds before the nose tilted upward. Reed activated the main engines and twisted the Panther's tail. An elephant sat on my chest as we leapt toward the sky. Normally, we would get into orbit, cut the engines, and coast for a while as the dropship caught up to Valkyrie or the ship matched course and speed with us. Reed took the Omega priority literally, burning the main engines continuously, including what I thought was an overly dramatic deceleration burn to slow us before we smashed into the docking bay.
Thank you for flying Fireball Airways, Reed announced as the whine of the engines faded away. Please collect your belongings, and we hope you do not fly with us like this again anytime soon. I got that message also.
Chen, I called the duty officer as Margaret unlatched my safety straps.
Sit rep. 3 more dropships incoming. Last one is 17 minutes out.
17? That surprised me. Why so slow?
It's a resupply bird carrying pallets of fresh food. The closest ship carrying crew is 4 minutes out. If we don't wait for the supply ship, we can break orbit in...
There was a pause as she consulted a display.
4 minutes, 36 seconds.
Pressing the mute button on my phone, I called, Skippy, what do you think?
I think you monkeys get cranky when you don't have enough fresh food. Do you want to survive on veggies from the hydroponics garden and sludges?
That's a no, I told him. Chen, tell that supply bird to burn hard to get here and we won't take time to unload. Soon as that ship is secured in the cradle, break orbit. That flight crew will be coming with us through the jump. Chatterjee can send a destroyer to pick up that bird before we transit through the wormhole. The flight crew would miss sleeping in their beds on Club Skippy that night, but they wouldn't be stuck aboard Valkyrie for the duration.
Aye, sir.
In the passageway, I pinged Admiral Chatterjee directly.
Bishop, what's the emergency?
He knew the issue was not on our side of the wormhole, or I would have recommended the fleet go to battle stations. Skippy thinks we might have an opportunity and the door could be closing soon.
Interesting. Skippy just realized this opportunity exists?
Sir, actually, I just realized it's a possibility.
I see, he grunted,
indicating he did not understand at all. He did understand that whatever the opportunity was, I couldn't talk about it.
Good hunting, then.
Sir, if you have any message traffic for Earth, transmit it to us before we jump. We might be going home after our, errand. He whispered something inaudible, likely ordering his staff to compress messages and beam them to Valkyrie.
Then, Bishop, someday we will have a beer, and you will tell me what all this is about.
I hope so, sir. By the time I ended the call, I was at the door to my cabin. The door automatically slid open for me. Tossing my rucksack on the couch, I turned to walk right back out, but again my way was blocked by Adams. I hadn't realized she was behind me. She set her go bag on the floor. Inside my cabin. I raised an eyebrow.
Seriously? You don't want this?
I didn't say that, but you,
Joe, of the things we have to worry about, do regs written on a planet halfway across the galaxy matter?
Oh, hell no. If this mission fails, nothing matters. She cocked her head.
Is this another save the world thing?
It's more of a save all life in the galaxy thing. Her eyes opened wide.
In that case,
she nudged the bag farther inside the cabin.
I'm glad I brought a toothbrush. Joe, if this makes you uncomfortable, you just called me Joe again. This time you said it aboard the ship. I will call you Joe here,
she pointed to the deck of my cabin.
Out there, she pointed to the passageway. It's General or Sir.
You know, I grinned. If you want to call me Sir in our cabin, I...
Only if Sir is a nickname, she said.
But she said it with a twinkle in her eyes.